It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Congress has passed a $900 billion economic relief bill after months of negotiations. We'll look at what's in, what's out, and how lawmakers managed to reach a compromise. First, in a year defined by the COVID-19 pandemic, we also said farewell to many beloved political figures, athletes, entertainers, and more. Some of them are among the 1.7 million people worldwide who died of complications related to the disease. That list includes former Republican presidential candidate and entrepreneur Herman Cain, Roy Horn of the magician duo Siegfried and Roy, and country music artists Joe Diffie and Charlie Pride. COVID aside, we also said goodbye to U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, basketball superstar Kobe Bryant, Jeopardy host Alex Trebek, actor Sean Connery, author Mary Higgins Clark, and more. In many cases, the pandemic limited people's ability to mourn those losses, so we'll take an opportunity to do that here on the radio. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Which public figure's death hit you the hardest and why? What did they mean to you? What did you learn from them? Did they influence your life? And what do you want people to know about them? And looking back through history, not just 2020, was there a death of a famous person before this year that had a big and memorable impact on you? A lot of people might say Elvis or John Lennon or JFK. Maybe you have your own. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at @CentralTimeWPR. Robert Thompson is a trustee professor of TV and pop culture and founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Bob, it's been a while. Welcome back to Central Time.
It has been. Thanks for having me.
Well, we do, at the end of each year, often look back at celebrities and other famous people who passed away. What are your overall thoughts on what this means in this unusual year of 2020?
Well, I suppose when we're thinking about people dying in 2020, as you pointed out already, we think immediately of the people who died just today in 2020, which is so many people from the pandemic. Of course, when we look at the list of celebrities, well-known people, people everybody knows that have died, it looks like a very, very bad year. We lost a lot of important people. Then again, if you look at the list of any year, one of the properties of human life is that that it ends. And we tend to try to put some kind of sense to this. There are bad years and good years. People go in threes, all these different sorts of things. But we lost a lot of well-known and important people this year, but we do nearly every year. I suppose what's interesting about this year is there were a couple of big people in categories far apart. In social justice, both John Lewis and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, those were two, you know, big people. You mentioned Sean Connery. The James Bond universe also lost Honor Blackman, who'd been in Goldfinger, and Diana Rigg, who was in Her Majesty's Secret Service. And then you also mentioned Alex Trebek, but Regis Philbin also died this year, two giants in the area of game shows. So whatever category you pick, we seem to have lost quite a number of well-known people this year.
And of course, in most of these, most of the names you mentioned and many of the others, we didn't know them personally, most of us, and yet for certain kinds of celebrities, whether it's a prominent active political figure or that TV game show host who spent time with us in our living rooms day after day, we feel a personal connection with them, don't we?
We do, and it depends on the celebrity, whether it's a movie star or a television person or some important political or social leader. And in some cases, and I think Trebek was an example of this, where for the fact that he had been on for so long doing Jeopardy, he was slouching towards 40 years, 36, I think, that he did that. The fact that that was on every single day and it played right in the middle of our domestic space while we were, you know, welcoming kids home from school and making dinner and all the rest of it. and the fact that he was, while Mr. Smart Guy, he was also this very affable character. I think a lot of people really got the sense that this was a guy that they spent a little time with 5 days a week. And even though we were in the middle of two monster news stories, the spread of the pandemic and the controversy over the election, one of the only stories that managed to break through those two on the 24-hour news cycle, cable news cycle, was in fact when Trebek passed.
Let's give a listen to Alex Trebek back in 2018 on Jeopardy, the category, a timely one, football, which proved to be a big-time stumper.
Football, 200.
Your choice, do or don't name this play in which the quarterback runs the ball and can choose to pitch it to another back. It's an option play. Ryan?
Football, 400.
I can tell you guys are big football fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Landry perfected the shotgun formation with this team. Dallas Cowboys. Do you think we should go to commercial?
Well, I could have even gotten those. And just talk about that idea of a public figure, Bob, having that, being that kind of familiar voice, that familiar face that, again, we don't know them, but we spend that time with them.
Yeah, well, there have been a number of them that have done this, and it seems so effortless. It has to, or it wouldn't work. But people who, even though they're being watched by millions and millions, completely anonymously, spread over the country and in some cases the world, there are some that really make you feel like they could be over the fence when you're hanging out laundry. Trebek was one of those. He was very, very good at making that connection through the glowing dots of phosphorus or whatever a TV set is made of. Oprah Winfrey was one of those. I think Johnny Carson was one of those. Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers would be another. Maybe Walter Cronkite. That sense that in ways very different than some other people that are very, very well known, that we really do get a sense that we're connecting with them on some completely hypothetical sort of level. You know, everybody knows who the President of the United States is at any given time, but I don't think they feel like they know the President of the United States like they knew Alex Trebek.
We are talking about well-known people who passed away in 2020, a difficult year in many ways. Robert Thompson is with us from the Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you want to bring up somebody who passed this year or talk about our connections with well-known people and why, even when it's somebody we don't know personally, it can affect us. 800-642-1234. If you tried calling in but got dropped there, looks like we had a glitch in our phone line. Try again. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's listen to another person you mentioned. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg here talking to NPR. This is last year. She, of course, passed away this year. Here she was talking about the challenges women faced in pursuing a career in law.
So I'll tell you what Justice O'Connor once said to me. She said, suppose we had come of age at a time when women lawyers were welcome at the bar. You know what? Today we would be retired partners from some large law firm. But because that was route was not open to us, we had to find another way, and we both end up on the United States Supreme Court.
And the passing of Justice Ginsburg got a lot of attention for a lot of reasons, I think. Her groundbreaking career as a lawyer and then judge and then justice, of course. But, of course, her passing brought up a big political debate all of a sudden, Bob.
Right. Of course, the I think of all the people we've mentioned, sad, of course, when anybody passes. But if you're really needing to look at the impact that was left in the list of well-known people that died in 2020, I'm not so sure you could do any better than putting her at the very top of the list, because her passing and the timing of her passing, which left room to get another appointee onto the court, is something that will have an impact that will be felt for probably many, many, many years. You know, even listening to that, though, not only was she such an important person in justice and all of these kinds of things we think about, but she was also a real character. I mean, called the notorious RBG and all the rest of it. She was a, you know, looked like this just diminutive justice judge in a robe. But she also was someone that people loved to do impressions of and all of that, and usually with great affection.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hello. I have always referred to myself as being a carrier pigeon person living in an electronic age. And one day I was listening to Jeopardy, and I heard Alex Trebek say that he always thought of himself as having an analog brain in a digital age. And I thought to myself, we belong together.
I love it, Nancy. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, sometimes there is a characteristic of that person we see on TV or movies or in politics or whatever, and we think, yeah, they're kind of like me, or we're on the same page in some ways, Bob.
Yeah, that is a beautiful story, and I think a lot of people felt that way about him for all kinds of different reasons. But the fact that he would throw out comments like that let you into what made you feel like was a bit of personal information. And if you happen to share that kind of information, that's what makes connections and builds intimacy and all of those kinds of things. And even though he was, again, this Mr. Know-it-all, he had all the answers. Of course, they were printed on cards. He also, you know, time released led us into getting to know him in other kinds of ways. Matter of fact, this week, yesterday, Jeopardy started 2 weeks of the best of Alex Trebek. And then starting January 4th, you will get to see the final 5 days of new episodes that he taped just before his death. And he was taping right up to the very end.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Joe in Eagle River now. Joe, hi.
Hi, how's it going? I just wanted to mention that Kobe Bryant was a person who was a big influence on my life. I played basketball in an amateur capacity and been a huge basketball fan my whole life. And the fact that he was not battling a disease that kind of came out of nowhere, he's the exact same age as I am. And another layer to it is that, unfortunately, he also lost his daughter along with him in the helicopter crash. That really impacted me.
Joe, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that story. And that is an example of, Bob, kind of an out-of-nowhere shock. You know, nobody was expecting to lose somebody like Kobe Bryant and his daughter this year.
Right, that is a big distinction. And a lot of the people we've talked about so far, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, was getting old. We knew this was going to happen sooner or later. We had plenty of time to get used to the fact that Trebek had a very, very bad prognosis in what he had, and many of the other people that we lost. You know, there was this sense of you kind of prepare, like when you lose an older member of the family. They're very different when it, in fact, is something sudden. And Kobe Bryant, and you're right, made doubly tragic by the fact that he also lost his daughter, that he was such a beloved character. I think we had another in Chadwick Boseman. He knew
definitely
that he had that diagnosis, but most everybody else did not know that. And those kind of sudden passings are, I think, we experience in very, very different ways.
Thanks for that call. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. We're talking to Robert Thompson from Syracuse University, popular culture expert there. Talk about deaths of high-profile people in 2020. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Was there a passing of a well-known person this year that affected you in particular, surprised you maybe, or do you remember a moment in the past of the loss of a famous person? Maybe you remember where you were when you found out. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. You got to know. Crossing the Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We're talking about some of the big names we lost in 2020, including Kenny Rogers there with The Gambler. You can join in with your celebrity loss, a public figure who passed away that you want to bring up. 800-642-1234. Robert Thompson stays with us, pop culture expert at Syracuse University. Back to your calls now. Darren is with us in Green Bay. Darren, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. I think we long-haired people have to mention what a devastating year it was for anybody born in the late 60s or 70s to have lost Neil Peart from Rush and Eddie Van Halen in the same year is almost unthinkable. I know we have a lot of super musicians these days who were inspired by those two gentlemen to play phenomenally, but they were the originators, and now they're gone. I think they both actually died of different types of brain cancer. Eddie said that his was brought on, he thought, from putting his metal plectrum between his teeth and being around all those waves from amplifiers and so forth. But to have lost one at the start of the year, then all the COVID, and then it comes out that Eddie has been battling cancer for something like 10 years and taking private treatments in Germany, his son reveals. And he was always such a happy character, whereas Neil was always the erudite and loquacious professor who released many wonderful written works too. To lose those two champions of that form of music, it's going to be pretty difficult to replace.
As a fellow long hair, Darren, if the afterlife is so constituted to allow them to be in a band together now, that's going to be a heck of an act.
You know, there was one guy who went to heaven there, and the angel Gabriel said, come on in, got a marvelous rehearsal facility over, and they go over and they see John Bonham on the drums and Jaco Pastorius or Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy, my guy, on the bass. And the singer, Freddie Mercury, he says, wait a minute. He said, who's that on guitar? He said, I thought all these cats were dead. Isn't that Eric Clapton? He said, no, that's God. He just thinks he's Eric Clapton.
Darren, thanks for the call. Yeah, the music world, and again, some earlier than expected losses there, Bob.
Yeah, and it is interesting how they do pair Neil Peart and Eddie Van Halen is. That just seems so horrible to lose them both in one year. Though now you've got me thinking about this waiting room of the recently deceased in heaven. Let's join Eddie and Neil with Little Richard, also an absolute legend. He was in his 80s, of course, but Helen Reddy, who of course gave us the anthem of I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. A lot of important people in very, very, very different parts of the musical world. And, of course, you played that clip of Kenny Rogers at the beginning. Peter Tork, the keyboardist from the Monkees.
We also asked listeners to share, those people who passed at some point, not necessarily in 2020, but they remember that moment. Let's go to Lee and Rhinelander. Lee, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to tell us about Lee?
I when I was in college in Minneapolis, I was playing in a band, and this is back in the early 90s, and Nirvana was just off the top of the charts, and I found out that he had killed himself while I was working overnight, slicing and bagging challah bread. And they wound up playing every song that he'd ever recorded. And that's what turned me into a musician. I took the sadness and I turned it into something positive. And I'll never forget that.
Lee, thank you so much for sharing that. And Bob, there some people have that, I remember where I was when I heard that. In this case, Kurt Cobain died. Other people might fill in the blank with other names, those really impactful moments that we remember.
Right. And in that case, just a very daily activity of slicing bread. What's interesting about that story, which I think is probably also something that many people have similar stories, is that one death resulted in a certain kind of resurrection. One musician dies, another, in essence, is born.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story. I appreciate it. Lynn joins us next in Appleton. Lynn, hi.
I just wanted to mention, huge, huge Star Wars fan. And we lost David Prowse, who played Darth Vader,
and Jeremy Bullock, who played Boba Fett, within like a week or two of each other. And those both hit me hard because I've actually met both of them at conventions. And they were very kind, very gracious. I had drinks with David Prowse, which was an amazing experience, and corrected Jeremy Bullock's English. So, so I had fun stories about both of them, and they're just really nice men.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Lynn, for sharing that with us. Yeah, sometimes, especially in the, I think, science fiction world, people do get to meet some of the famous people at conventions and such, Bob.
Right, and it was a good year for Star Wars, and it was a bad year for Star Wars. That's right. I hadn't thought of that 2020 pairing, but that's yet another one.
Well, I think we have time for one more caller. How about Randy in Madison? Randy, hi.
Hi. I have two of the more obscure famous names, if there is such a thing. And one is the Reverend Carl Vivian, who died two days before John Lewis. And I never heard of him. I was bone ignorant about him. And I learned his biography, and the guy is really impressive. Was a real trailblazer in the civil rights movement, who is just undeservedly obscure. And the other is Jerry Jeff Walker, who I've seen perform six times, and we've really gotten to know each other because I make kind of the same request every time I get to see him, and is just kind of a Texas legend.
Gotcha, Randy. Thank you so much for calling in. And Bob, mentioning Reverend Carl Vivian, I think we've all had the experience of we hear of somebody famous passing and we didn't know much about them. I've been there with musicians or authors and then go and check out their work and realize, wow, what we've been missing all along.
This is, to me, the brightest side of when we lose somebody, some beloved character, is that it essentially launches a history lesson. And if it's somebody we grew up with and we knew and all of that, we already knew those things. But there are often times when, especially young people, people of my students' age, who big, important characters pass, and it becomes the first time they hear it of who that person was. And it might be just a 2-minute package piece on a news story. But I think one of the bright spots of these passings is that we all do occasionally get a little history lesson.
Bob, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us. That's Robert Thompson from Syracuse University, looking at some of the famous names, big names who passed in 2020. This is Central Time. The House and Senate have passed a COVID-19 relief bill of more than $900 billion. Coming after months of negotiations, it includes extra unemployment benefits through March, more funding for the Paycheck Protection Program for businesses, and $600 checks to those making less than $75,000 a year. President Trump is expected to sign the bill in the coming days. President-elect Biden said in a tweet that he applauds the rescue package, but that Congress will need to take more action after the new year to support his COVID-19 plan. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the relief bill passed by Congress? What questions do you have about it? Are parts of this going to be helpful to you, your family, your business? Do you think it is too big, too small? And what do you think of the timing and how long it took to negotiate this in Congress? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephen Smith is a distinguished professor of social sciences and political science at Washington University in St. Louis and director of the Weidenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Well, there's a lot in the bill. It would take way longer than the show to read it all, certainly. But what stands out to you as the key points, the most important elements that ended up getting passed here?
Well, the stimulus checks of $600 a person for, as you said, for families with an income less than 75, and it tapers away up to 90,000. The extension of the PPP program, which provides loans to small businesses to allow them to keep people, their employees, on the books. That's awfully important. Those are probably the two biggest things that directly affect people, well, along with the unemployment supplement that gives people $300 a week extra on top of whatever their state unemployment benefit is. Those are the things that most directly affect the public. There is very important money in there for the COVID crisis itself directly. More money to guarantee that the vaccines can be provided free of charge. More money for the distribution process. More money for a variety of public health efforts. And those things are awfully important, too.
What do you make of the time it took to negotiate this? Really months. We've been talking about this on this show and elsewhere. Why did it take so long to arrive at this compromise?
Well, because many Republicans didn't want it and the Democrats wanted it. The timing was really driven by the political calendar. Republicans in the Senate and elsewhere were really badly divided on the need for it and certainly on the size of it. And their leader and the Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, delayed action really so as not to force the issue before the election. You know, it wasn't until the fall, really October, that McConnell produced a sort of a semi-serious proposal himself and got a couple of Senate votes on it that he knew he would lose. It was the election, which, of course, spared most Senate Republicans who were up for re-election, but produced a Democratic president. Who's going to come into office in January. So this was the window where the Republicans that they had left for working out a deal with the Democrats before a new Democratic president came into office. The election also prompted moderates. Well, I use that term cautiously, who always favored getting some relief bill, but they were deferring to their party leaders on both sides before the election. But with the election, they decided to jump forward and propose a measure. And then it made clear to leaders in both parties that there was a middle ground and that it might the whole, you know, party leaders in Congress want to get ahead of the parade. And there was a good chance, especially for the Republicans, that these moderate Republicans would force action even without their support. So the leaders got out there in front and found a compromise.
Talking to Stephen Smith from Washington University in St. Louis, looking at the COVID-19 economic relief package now passed by Congress, waiting for the president to sign it to come into action. You mentioned concern from some Senate Republicans. Wisconsin's Ron Johnson joined a handful of colleagues in voting against this, citing the deficit, the increase in federal spending. How important a concern is that? How much does it worry you, given that we've already racked up, we were going up in terms of annual deficits before the pandemic, a lot more during the pandemic?
Well, continuing a pandemic-created recession is a far, far bigger danger than creating and having to deal with this deficit later. It's true that we don't want to spend needlessly, but the truth is so many people are in such desperate condition right now that this money was desperately needed. And from an economic point of view, preventing us digging an even deeper economic hole is really critical. It would even be more expensive in the long run to rebuild our economy if we let it get destroyed further. It's cheaper to keep these businesses alive. It's cheaper to keep people afloat than it is to try to pick them up off the floor if the economy should collapse.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Joe is with us in Rhinelander. Joe, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Joe?
Yeah, so I personally, me and I think most of the rest of the country thinks that what this bill is insulting to them for a couple of reasons, for basically who gets most of the money and for what they've done, at like forcing businesses to close, and then they give us, you know, $600 back, and they want us to pretend like everything's okay after that, after basically destroying so many people's lives, and we're just supposed to say thank you. And then, you know, it's $900 billion and less than 200 billion goes to the people, and the rest of that goes to where?
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. First of all, Steve, to Joe's point about businesses, it's not just the $600 payments, it's the Paycheck Protection Program. But I've seen people say, hey, wait a minute, some businesses have been hit particularly hard by the pandemic and by pandemic-related shutdowns, the restaurants, entertainment, that kind of thing. Couldn't we have done a more focused relief program for those businesses and their employees hit hardest? Could we have done more in a package like this?
Well, you know, there's really two issues, whether more could be done and who should do it. Joe's mentioning that many businesses were forced to close either because of a loss of business or because of state health regulations imposed by governors. The truth is most of these forced closures were due to state action. And many states, of course, did not do the same thing that, say, Wisconsin did. So one of the challenges here is that we have in the United States, because of our federal state system, a very convoluted, difficult to coordinate process where the health regulations get imposed locally, and then we expect the aid to be generated on a national basis. I think we're learning some lessons here about the costs that we pay for that kind of sort of disorganization in a crisis. And I think it's time for for us to face up to whether or not our system of government is really well suited to all the challenges we might face in the future. It certainly is true that many businesses were not getting the aid that maybe they expected from the CARES Act. That was the relief package passed in the spring. But this PPP program, for example, is extended to restaurants, locally owned movie theaters, live entertainment venues, and other places, including many nonprofits that were excluded from the previous legislation. So I think in general, this plan has much, much broader coverage.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Stephen Smith, professor of social science and political science at Washington University, looking at the $900 billion COVID-19 relief bill passed by Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What part of the relief package sticks out to you? Is it going to have an impact on your family, your personal finances, your business? What should have been in there that isn't? What should not have been in there that is? And what questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We pick up our talk now with Steve Smith, professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis, looking at the COVID-19 relief bill passed by Congress, what's in and what is not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Rose is with us in Menominee Falls. Rose, hello.
Hi there. I just had a question about how it was determined who would receive checks. They said people with incomes of $75,000 or less. I don't understand it. I got a check. My husband got a check. We don't need this money. We're retired. We have pension income. We have Social Security income. We have rental income. And we're receiving $1,200 checks each, while other people who don't have enough money to pay their rent or feed their children are getting the same amount. I don't understand. Why didn't they say, let's focus on the truly poor and help them out and not bother to send checks to people who are doing just fine? In fact, during the pandemic, all we've been able to do is save money because we can't live our usual privileged lives going out to dinner and traveling.
Rose, thanks a lot for the call. And I've heard this, Steve, and I've heard concerns from even some economists saying somebody in Rose's position, they'll get that check and save it. They're not going to stimulate the economy by saving it. What do you think of that kind of scattershot approach to send more people checks, even if, as Rose says, they don't need them?
I think I'm sympathetic to that point of view. And as you were suggesting, Rob, many economists are too. But the primary reason why they're why they're doing it that way is so they can do it quickly. This, of course, is what was done in the CARES Act approved in the spring. And the sense was that this was such a genuine emergency, such a shock wave of unemployment was created that we needed to get the money out quickly. And the quickest way to do that was to send a check to everyone who met the criterion, income criterion, who was on the IRS record books, and just to send them a check without an application process, without more complicated criteria. That was the reason. Now, they've had lots of time to plan something new, but they haven't used it for this kind of purpose. And so they just fell back on the old process, cut the amount from $1,200 to $600, and the checks will likely start going out next week. But I think Rose makes a very good point. We could be giving more money to the more needy people if we didn't give as much money to working class and middle class individuals who are retired or still have a job and really don't need that extra cash right now.
Rose, thanks for that call. We'll go to Hildy now in La Crosse. Hildy, hello.
So my question is, it seems like for the second time that people who are adult student dependents are not receiving any kind of benefit. For example, I have a son who's a full-time college student who doesn't work as he's also an athlete. He does not get $600, and I do not get the credit for him for being an adult dependent. Why is that happening yet again?
Hildy, thanks for the call. And yeah, for taxpayers get that $600 for each child under age 17. So there's this gray area, this the zone, Steve, where you don't get anything, the parents or the kid.
Yeah, so you can still treat them as dependents for tax purposes, the older children, but you do not get, and they do not receive this stimulus check. That's right. I think there were at least more than a few Democrats in Congress who thought that that ought to be changed, but they just simply used the same general formula that they used in the previous relief bill. That didn't go anywhere, largely because of Republican objections.
Thanks a lot for calling in with your question. Scott joins us next in Appleton. Scott, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, what type of things are written into this legislation that don't really have anything to do with the pandemic? And for example, I understand that part of the legislation that's going through with this bill is changing if you're doing, if you're streaming pirated video or whatever content, it now, if you get, it can be punished as a felony. Are there other things like that being written into this legislation that's going forward?
Scott, thanks for the call. I don't know about that particular example, but Steve, I keep seeing examples of a bunch of other stuff mixed into the legislation. Sure. What's going on there?
Well, first of all, of course, this relief bill was attached to an equally long omnibus appropriations bill, it's called, which provides funding for the federal government for the rest of the fiscal year. Congress failed to pass any of the usual 12 spending bills, and so they packaged them, and they were sending that along, and they've attached this COVID relief bill to that. So it's an extremely large bill, nearly 6,000 pages because of the combination. And because this is probably the last bill that has a chance of getting through this Congress, many legislators were looking to attach other legislation as provisions in this very, very large bill. So, for example, there's the reauthorization for the intelligence agencies, not a minor matter by any means. It established a process to avoid surprise bills from hospitals for emergency out-of-network care. It bans the use of the Postal Service for delivering e-cigarettes to discourage teen use. It authorizes two new Smithsonian museums, a Women's History Museum and an American Latinos Museum. and many, many other things. And they're in there because it was the last major legislation, last piece of legislation that was likely to get to the president's desk this year.
Thanks for that call. I want to spend our last few minutes on a couple of things that aren't in the final product, things that were deal breakers for a long time, respectively, for Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi. Let's start. Majority Leader McConnell had wanted liability protections for businesses when it came to COVID lawsuits. Why had he held out for that? How did that end up getting dropped?
It was dropped because the Democrats opposed it. The Democrats wanted general aid for state and local governments. There was some thought that those two issues, liability protection and state aid, could be combined in a separate bill, but that idea was dropped. Rather than have those two issues hold up the legislation, they dropped both of them. The Democrats wanted the additional state aid, in order to assist states in, you know, covering the surge in expenses and the fall off in revenue due to the pandemic and its economic effects. But the Republicans opposed that additional state aid, many of them thinking that, as President Trump complained, would end up with in large urban states with Democratic governments. So they opposed that, and the Democrats opposed the liability protection for business. So both issues were dropped in order to get the rest of the bill through.
Now, I know a lot of people who watch government are watching now local and state governments and the funding situation they're in. As you mentioned, a surge in costs related to COVID, a decline in revenues. What are you watching for over the next year when it comes to, you know, state, county, local governments, probably school districts for that matter?
Well, the thing is, the bill did include sizable funding for state and local governments. It provided special funds for schools and universities, unemployment benefits to help states deal with costs there, renters assistance that states might otherwise provide, billions of dollars for transportation programs, mass transit and highways and so on. Fire and emergency services received a big chunk of money, all that's otherwise on the shoulders of local governments. So state and local governments got some tailored funding, but they didn't get any general revenue that they could spend as they pleased. But states will still be hurting. We're going to find states up against a serious budget crunch in the next couple of years with real pressure, therefore, on state support for education and health and other basic programs that states are devoted to.
And briefly, Steve, President-elect Biden says, great, let's do more next year. What are the prospects, I guess partly depending on what comes out of Georgia, for exactly another relief package?
Well, I think we'll get something. We'll all be looking to see how aggressive a new President Biden will be once he's in office. But as you were suggesting, a lot turns on those Georgia elections. They'll either leave us with a very tiny Republican majority or a 50-50 tie that makes the Democrats the technical majority because they have the new vice president. One or two seats will end up making the difference on a wide range of legislation. And surely among the most important early on will be some supplementary relief bill.
Steve, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Great to be with you.
Stephen Smith is a professor of social science and political science at Washington University in St. Louis. He was with us to talk about the $900 billion plus relief bill passed by Congress this week and what led lawmakers to support it after months of negotiations. I'm picking up. That's the Beach Boys with Good Vibrations, the biggest hit that I could find featuring the sound of a theremin. And I stumbled across this earlier today. This year marks the 100-year anniversary of the invention of the theremin. What's a theremin? It's a musical instrument that's played with no physical contact. Performers move their hands near two antennas that determine the pitch and the volume of the sound. The end result is the spooky sound you hear in many movie soundtracks. By the way, I found out that the Beach Boys there technically used an electro theremin, which uses knobs instead of antennas to simulate the sound. The original hands-free instrument was invented by accident by Leon Theremin in the early days of the Soviet Union. He was using antennas to try to develop a motion sensor when he realized he could use them to trigger sounds. The theremin ended up in movie soundtracks like The Day the Earth Stood Still and Ghostbusters, and it inspired the development of early synthesizers. I was poking around for some theremin music online, and I saw that our friends from Minnesota Public Radio had a video up of a performance by Leon Theremin himself. Here's a listen. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.